followed all of them, Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, will be elevated to the transcendental platform, and their lives will be successful. The injunctions in the Vedas are explicit directions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The example cited in this verse is that bulls tied by ropes in their nostrils move according to the direction of the driver. Similarly, if we move according to the instructions of the Vedas, the perfect path for our lives will be set. Otherwise, if we do not move in that way but act according to our whimsical ideas, our lives will be spoiled by confusion and will end in despair. Actually, because people at the present moment are not following the instructions of the Vedas, they are all confused. We must therefore accept this instruction by Lord Brahma to Priyavrata as to the factual scientific direction leading to the success of life. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 16:23. Yashastravidhim utsrijya vartate kamakarita nasasidhim avapnoti nasukam naparam gatim. If we do not live according to the injunctions of the Shastras, the Vedas, we shall never achieve success in life, to say nothing of happiness or elevation to higher statuses of living. Translation again. My dear boy, all of us are bound by the Vedic injunctions to the divisions of Varnashram according to our qualities and work. These divisions are difficult to avoid because they are scientifically arranged. We must therefore carry out our duties of Varnashram Dharma, like bulls obliged to move according to the direction of a driver pulling on ropes knotted to their noses. So as we read in the previous verse, every body is constructed by the modes of material nature. And therefore, every body has inherent in it certain tendencies and propensities, as well as certain strengths and weaknesses. And a certain amount and type of happiness and distress. So we get a particular body under the direction of the material modes of nature. And in one sense, from the point of view of the present life, we have no choice in the body that we get. But what choice we have is how to use the body. Whether to use the body according to the Vedic injunctions, which come ultimately from the Lord, or whether we use the body according to our own ideas or whims. In the Bhagavad Gita, the body is called a yantra or machine, just like a car is a machine. So the soul is given a certain type of machine or vehicle, just like someone might have a Mitsubishi, someone might have a Toyota, someone might have a Mercury, someone might have a Lincoln. And the vehicle will remain the same, whether the driver is a devotee or a materialist. If I have a Ford and I become a devotee, the vehicle still remains a Ford. But the difference is that before I became a devotee, I would use the vehicle to go to places for sense gratification. And now I use the vehicle to come to the temple to engage in devotional service, or I use the vehicle to go on errands for the temple. So that is within our freedom to choose how we use the vehicle that we have. Although it is not within our power to make, it may not be within our power to make radical alterations in the vehicle. So just as in ordinary affairs, vehicles come with manuals how to operate the vehicle. Similarly, when we assume a material body in the material world, we're also given a manual how to use the body. And the manual is the Vedic injunctions. And the directions, just like the manual for different types of cars is different, so similarly the directions for different types of bodies, how the different types of bodies can be used, is also different. So in order to know how our body should be used, we need to know in which category our body comes. Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra. And according to that particular body or that particular machine, we have a certain set of instructions. So, that's all well and good, and the verse says so, and the purport says so. But what about us in the Krishna consciousness movement? The way Srila Prabhupada set up the movement, we don't really discuss practical procedure what we are, whether we're Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, or Sudras, and consequently we won't discuss which rules and regulations or which prescriptions apply to us. But still, as Srila Prabhupada often said, the divisions are natural. And whether people acknowledge them explicitly or not does not change the fact. And we see in society, some people naturally are teachers, some are executives, some are bankers, some are farmers, some are laborers. There are different occupations, and people naturally try to find an occupation that will suit them, in which they can be happy and enthusiastic. But the problem arises that quite often the person doesn't fit the job. And therefore, so many people really don't like their jobs. Of course, there could be many reasons why they don't like their jobs. And Srila Prabhupada gave the example during the 60s and 70s when we had the war in Vietnam, that the young people were protesting because they were being drafted into the army, that they really didn't have the nature of kshatriyas, they didn't have the spirit to fight, so they were protesting. And Srila Prabhupada also made the point that people should be educated differently according to their duties. You know, a kshatriya is educated differently than a Brahmin or a Vaishya. But in the Western system, everyone more or less gets the same education regardless of their nature, and then they sort of have to figure out where they fit in or just accept whatever they can get. And often the results are not that congenial. So we also, as devotees, have to find out what service is appropriate for us. And, you know, the managers help us, and our friends help us, and the spiritual master may help us. And, you know, when we find a service that is appropriate for us, that we can do well, then generally we'll be happy in it. In one conversation, Srila Prabhupada said that it's really not that difficult to determine where one fits or what service suits one. You know, if one does something nicely, if he likes to do it, and if people say, oh, he does this nicely, then that's his service, that's his position. But whatever service we do, based on our psychophysical natures, does not really matter from a spiritual point of view. What matters from the spiritual point of view is that we do the work for Krishna. Just like someone may, you know, go out in a Ford, someone might go out in a Mercury, someone might go out in a Lincoln to do service for the temple. But it doesn't really make any difference as far as the person's spiritual advancement, whether what kind of vehicle he's using to do the service. What does matter is the intention that he's using the vehicle to do service for the Lord and not for his sense gratification. And then there are people, they go out to do service for the temple, but on the way they make a stop and do something for themselves, and then they carry on and do the service for the temple. So there could also be mixed uses, mixed motives and mixed uses. So we shouldn't really discriminate against a person or for a person based on the type of vehicle he has, but we should really see the person, not the vehicle. How much the person is engaged in devotional service. And that should be the basic consideration. I think I'll end here because we will be meeting again at 11 for Thanksgiving, for giving thanks. So we'll just stop here and see if there are any questions or comments. Narottam.
Sometimes people object this type of worldview, saying that why does this have to be Vedic injunction?
In other words, why can't something be good in and of its own self? Why does it have to be service to God per se? Like, in other words, if an old lady gets hit by a car, or, you know, you go there and you help her. Or if,
you know, there's things that are good just because they're good. So now here we're being instructed that you have to follow Vedic injunctions or you're not doing the right thing, you're not doing something good, and you'll be in despair. So how can you draw that type of conclusion that only Vedic injunctions, following these Varnashram principles, are going to bring me out of despair?
Very good question. All right. He says that the verse enjoins us to follow the Vedic injunctions. But are there not activities that are inherently good without reference to the Vedic injunctions? For example, if an old lady is hit by a car and you help her, isn't that a good thing to do? Whether you know it to be a Vedic injunction or not. So I would say that there are certain natural laws, and the Vedic injunctions tell us what the laws are and guide us to follow the natural laws. But there are people who can, you know, understand the natural laws without specific reference to the Vedas as such. They may get direction from other scriptures or books of moral codes, or they may have their own intuitive sense of what is right and what is wrong. I've discussed with devotees from America, whose mothers, although they have no idea of the Vedas at all, or had no idea, but their mothers were actually quite proper Vedic women in terms of their devotion to their husbands, their care for their families, for their children, and even their service to their parents. So if someone is pious, you know, one may know what to do or what not to do. One may have an intuitive sense of what to do and what not to do, even without specific knowledge of the Vedic injunctions. And one still would be considered to be following them. And again, we come back to the point, Tesham Satata Yuktinam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam Tadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yenamam Upayantite, that one who constantly serves the Lord with devotion gets direction from the Lord within the heart. And that may not necessarily be strictly within the Vedic system, but the Lord is the same in everyone's heart, and if someone is sincerely trying to serve the Lord will give direction. And that's how many of us came to Krishna consciousness. We didn't know about Krishna consciousness, but still Krishna was there in the heart and he led us here. He led us to Krishna consciousness. He led us to our spiritual master. He led us to begin the process, and he leads us, he continues to lead us along the way, direct us. So the fact that one does not have knowledge from the books does not mean that one cannot get the benefit of following the injunctions even without the knowledge. And of course, one can also get the reaction for not following without the knowledge. And the same applies even to devotees. Two devotees, probably Gopal Krishna Maharaj and Yasomatinanda Prabhu, were in the room with Srila Prabhupada and Juhu discussing about the devotees, some devotees who had left the Krishna Balaram Mandir and gone to Radha Kund and were associating with Babaji's there. And, Gopal Krishna Maharaj kept, talking about these devotees who had gone there. And Srila Prabhupada kept saying, they're not devotees, they're rascals. And then a little later, Gopal Krishna Maharaj said, but Srila Prabhupada, these devotees have gone there. And Prabhupada said, why do you call them devotees? They're not devotees, they're rascals. And then, the point came up that, yes, Rupa Goswami says we should take bath in Radha Kund, but that's the end of the instructions in the Upadeshamrita. But what about the first instruction? They're not even following the first instruction. Vajra Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam, control the urges of the senses. So then Yasomati Nandan Prabhu said that, well, the problem is that they don't study the books. They don't have the knowledge in the books, and that's why they think they can just go off to Radha Kund, and they don't know this system step by step. And Srila Prabhupada said, no. If one is sincere, one will not make a mistake. So in other words, if one is sincere, if one has good intentions, then, Krishna in the heart will guide one, either directly, or Krishna in the heart will guide one to the type of association that will give one the proper guidance. So that book knowledge of the Vedic injunctions isn't the ultimate criteria. Yes, Dharma Prabhu.
Following up on your discussion, is it better to risk disturbing somebody who's following these principles but doesn't know about the books? So, by giving them the book, even though it might disturb them, I'm getting it. It's like sometimes I think we encounter people, especially family members, they're almost there. They're doing nice things, they understand all these principles, but they just don't have the source. And sometimes I feel like I defer too much to that, and they're not pushing enough to try and maybe tell them, wait, this is where it comes from, this is organized, read this. But at the same time, we're enjoying not to disturb somebody that's progressing, even if they're doing, demigod worship. For them, that might be as much as they can handle. But I guess my question is, how much should we, is it better to risk disturbing them a little bit by trying to give them the real source of these things? Or do we say, no, they're doing okay, Christian in the heart?
Did everyone hear the question? If people are sort of following in their own way, is it worth taking the risk of disturbing them by offering them the knowledge in the Vedic literatures? Well, preaching always means taking risk. The two go together. There's no such thing as preaching without risk. But the risk should be calculated. If we approach someone and they get Krishna consciousness, then definitely there's a benefit. But if we approach them and they react in a negative way, then there's an opposite effect. So we have to calculate. I mean, definitely we should try to give them direct Krishna consciousness, or even, you know, some of the, you could say, subordinate principles of Krishna consciousness whenever we get the chance. But especially with family members, they may not take you as an authority very easily, because they're just used to seeing you as a family member. You know, like once my sister visited the New York temple, and the temple president was preaching to her, and she seemed like very interested and receptive. But when I would preach to her, she wouldn't want to hear it. So, you know, I mentioned it to the temple president, and he said, well, yeah, it's always like that, because, you know, she remembers, you know, you used to make a mess in your room, or used to tickle her and pinch her, and you know, she can't see you as in that way. So, especially in America, in other places, it's more common that one person will become a devotee and the rest will follow. But in America, it's more common that the family members come to appreciate Krishna consciousness more from someone independent of the family member who joined. But still, they get great benefit by having a family member in Krishna consciousness. You know, they serve you. They might serve you thinking you're their son or whatever the relation is. But because you're serving Krishna, ultimately their service to you is going to Krishna. And if they appreciate you, they benefit. I mean, anyone who appreciates any devotee benefits, whether they even know the person is a devotee or not. Srila Prabhupada said if someone like looks out the window and sees some devotees on the street and thinks, oh, they look like nice people, person makes advancement, even though he doesn't know or she doesn't know they're devotees. And then there was the case of Mother Urmila. Her father, I think, was quite a pious man. So he came to visit her at the Chicago temple. And he met Srila Prabhupada. And he sort of asked Srila Prabhupada that, is it proper that I'm coming here? Because my intention really isn't to see the deities or to serve Krishna. My intention is just to see my daughter and son-in-law. So is it proper to come to the temple in that mood or that consciousness? And Srila Prabhupada replied, in effect, that you love your daughter, and your daughter loves Krishna, so things equal to the same thing are equal to each other, so ultimately you also love Krishna. So I said, you're welcome. You're welcome here. So, yeah, I mean, preaching always involves consideration of time, place, and circumstance, and audience, in other words. And, you know, if they just like you and help you out in different ways, you know, they'll make advancement even if you don't, like, bring out the Bhagavad Gita and start reading injunctions.
How would you present, say, the difference? I find, you know, there's a difficulty for people in general to understand that there is a difference, say, for example, taking care of their family as opposed to coming for an arti or chanting Hare Krishna. They would think it's equally religious. You see? So how do you present, you know, and help somebody to understand that there is a higher, you know, position there's a higher level of service. There's a higher benefit to be achieved saying something directly Krishna conscious, like chanting Hare Krishna, as opposed to something that would be like a Dharma principle.
Well, that's another topic, which maybe we'll discuss tomorrow. But I don't know if he'll be here. And that is that in Rupa Goswami's discussion of the items of devotional service, Varnashram is excluded. And after he lists the 64 items of devotional service and substantiates them with references to the Shastra, he discusses the items that he has not included in the list, including Varnashram Dharma, cultivation of knowledge, and cultivation of renunciation. And then he explains why he has not included them, or in other words, why they do not count as bhakti. So we should know, I mean, when someone is ready, they should know what is bhakti and what is not. Varnashram Dharma, in and of itself, is not bhakti. But it can be supportive of bhakti. And when it is supportive of bhakti, in a general sense, it can be considered part of the whole process of devotional service. But, you know, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, if one follows the rules and regulations of Varnashram Dharma, but without any God consciousness, the person goes to hell. Might come as a surprise, but the person goes to hell. That Varnashram Dharma has value when it is accompanied by Krishna consciousness. But it's true that if someone is pious and they do their duties as a mother, as a wife, as a daughter, you know, they're more likely to be God conscious or to be open to God consciousness. But those duties, you know, of Varnashram Dharma without God consciousness are basically useless. So ultimately we do need to add that, like Prabhupada said, they're all zeros, but if you add the one of Krishna, then all the zeros become 1,000 or 1,000,000 or 1,000,000,000. So that must be there. Ultimately that must be there. Yes, Rupanuga Prabhu.
Well, I do usually the analogy of the person being a different vehicle. It doesn't matter what kind of vehicle he has. But there seems to be that the type of body that a person has does affect his propensity or inclination.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. So, oh, his inclination towards devotional service. Yeah. Yeah.
So we might stereotype and say that people that have a certain type of body, skin color, hair color, whatever, they might think that they have a stronger propensity to do devotional service, but then we see exceptions to that.
Yes.
So can we draw conclusions about the type of body a person has and with regard to ability to get into devotional service?
Yes, we can. Srila Prabhupada has explained that anyone can take to devotional service, whether they're in the mode of ignorance, I mean, predominantly influenced by the mode of ignorance, by the mode of passion, or the mode of goodness. But it's easier if someone is in the mode of goodness. And he gave the example that someone in the mode of goodness is like dry straw. You know, if you just touch a spark to it, it'll ignite. And someone in the mode of passion is like damp straw. I mean, if you expose it to fire, it can catch fire, but it's harder, and there's more of a chance that it won't catch. And someone in the mode of ignorance is like wet straw. Even then, it can catch fire, you know, if the fire is strong enough, if the fire is strong enough, and if it's exposed to the fire for long enough, it can also catch fire. So there's possibility for everyone. But it's easier if someone is in the mode of goodness, and less so if the person's in passion, and still more difficult if the person's more in ignorance. But what I was describing was once a person has decided to become a devotee, then it doesn't matter that much what the type of body is. I mean, it will affect the work he does, but it won't affect him or her spiritually, because whatever the body is, once he's decided or she's decided to use it in Krishna's service, he or she will make the same advancement. Whether the work is plowing the fields or translating the books. Yes, Rasi Kendra Prabhu?
Well, it seems like the chaos in society now is because people were not qualified to take up leadership roles. Like you can see a lot of leaders in the country, they're not genuinely inclined. In fact, they're not even good citizens. So that's why probably most of the chaos in the world is because of people who are not inclined to lead. I mean, the qualities to lead are leading the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also in our society, we find that devotees who have got a certain inclination, they find that they excel in a certain role are actually filling other roles. But our society, the society this time, it's not plain, okay, this is your service, and this is your service. And I think it's very difficult to institute that among devotees. Because everybody has a family to maintain, they have to have a occupation, and the occupation might not be brahminical. They could be very brahminical, but the occupation could not be brahminical. Or somebody might not have a brahminical inclination, but they might be working in a brahminical role in their job as a teacher or a professor or somebody counsels people. So, at least within the context of society, how can we improve the situation where devotees have a certain inclination are engaged in a situation where we can maximize the benefits of society? Is there any strategy to instill that system? Or is there any way to do it according to your opinion?
Well, basically what you're talking about is good management. That the leaders should be able to match the individual with the service. And that is generally the best for the individual and for the mission. But depending on the varieties of service available, the devotee may or may not find the proper match within ISKCON. To give an example, when Srila Prabhupada was here, the movement was expanding more, in a way, and there were more varieties of service. For example, if someone was an artist, was a painter, he or she could paint for the books. But now, if someone's a painter or an artist, there is some scope to paint for books, but not as much as before. You know, during Srila Prabhupada's time, we were maintaining like 6 or 8 artists full time. You know, another case that I thought of recently is Sri Prahlad Das, who works with Anjadurmi Swami in Poland. You know, he's a great kirtan leader, he's a great preacher, he's a great pujari, he's a great devotee. But he felt at a certain stage that there was a part of him, like an intellectual part of him, that wasn't being stimulated by his service with Maharaj. And he thought, you know, he'll just have to go back to the university. And he'd already made all the arrangements, you know, to return to Australia and go to the university there. And then, and it was really a heartbreaking situation. I mean, Anjadurmi Swami and Sri Prahlad happened to visit me in Carpinteria, and coincidentally it was, you know, Sri Prahlad's birthday, so we sort of arranged a surprise party for him. And, you know, Maharaj was speaking about him and appreciating him and glorifying him, and he was crying, and it was like they were going to be separated. And then from America they went to Europe, and in England they met Goswami Maharaj. And Goswami Maharaj suggested to Sri Prahlad, well, why don't you work with the, you know, Vaishnava Academy in Mayapur? You know, you can sort of dovetail your desire to learn and use your intelligence there, you know, and you can help them develop their curriculum. And then, you know, that seemed to be the perfect solution, you know, 6 months there and 6 months on the tour. And everyone was delighted with the conclusion. But what if we didn't have the academy? He would have ended up going to the university. So a lot of how a person can fit will depend on the projects we have. You know, like during Prabhupada's time, we had so many big projects. You know, you could be an architect, you could be an engineer, you could be a craftsman, and you'd find work in ISKCON. But now we don't have that, you know, so many construction projects in ISKCON. So the people who have that propensity or that ability, they work outside. Yes, Ramchandra Prabhu.
Well, we would also say, Maharaj, that we don't have a think tank, you know, see what has to be
done. Sorry?
We could also say that we don't have a, you know, group of people or think tank to see what, you know, other things we can do.
We don't have a think tank to consider what new projects we can take up, you mean? Yeah. I mean, that's the key. That's the key. Like this Ramdev Das, the disciple of Srila Prabhupada, who last weekend, I think he came 60 miles by bicycle, and, you know, he really wanted to do some service. And he, you know, he's actually quite an accomplished guitar player. So he wanted to do service, but what could we offer him? It's either like cleaning. You know, the temple services are very limited now. But if we had, you know, like dynamic festivals with sort of rock and roll type music included, he would have fit in perfectly. But all we had to offer right now is sort of cleaning, you know. So, that's a fact. And Srila Prabhupada even said that he would create projects just to keep his disciples engaged. So,
I think sometimes Maharaj asks that we are just trying to engage people to not just maintain the things we have. Just like you mentioned about this person who was a musician, and you don't engage. Actually, I know one devotee who is a very, very good musician, and he can engage the pujari. And the Indian film industry wanted to actually hire and find him, you know, good sum of money to create melody. But he said, no, I want to accept Krishna's mission. So he didn't take that proposal. But at the same time, from childhood he grew up in a group of musicians, Indian musicians.
Hmm.
And he's a brilliant musician, but he had not used it.
Maybe that's why Krishna sent you here. put together the think tank and really get the movement spreading and pick up all the devotees in different places and bring them together for some dynamic programs. I'm serious. Yes.
You were saying about devotees not being engaged. You know, I know in our community we have, you know, fine craftsmen, carpenters, yeah, just fine craftsmen. In our temple, like I'm sure every house in America, you know, can use a fine craftsman all the time, working on it, fixing it. But temples don't have the facilities to engage a person with that has grandchildren. The temple can't afford to pay them. I mean, so the devotees, by craftsmen, are forced to work outside.
Yeah.
And by working outside, serving house, wife, children, they don't have enough time to really serve Krishna.
Now, there also may be the consideration of the life cycle. Because although, you know, when Srila Prabhupada was here, there was a lot of money coming in, and there were a lot of projects to engage devotees, but the way the devotees were living them, they were like brahmacharis. Even the married couples were like brahmacharis, so it didn't cost much to maintain them. But, you know, getting married, having children, they need more. Even me, I'm a sannyasi, but I can't live the way I did then. I also need more facility just because of my health. So we cost more to maintain now, many of us. But then the other side of it is that going through the Grihastha ashram, we may come to the stage where we're finished with many of those responsibilities, and then our needs will decrease again. You know, we don't have to feed our children and clothe our children and educate our children. Our needs may decrease. And if we were sort of able to save something, then as vanaprasthas, we can come back and use all of our abilities and all the experience we got over the years working in the world, and again be fully engaged, or, you know, to a large extent engaged directly in Krishna's service.
Is there any kind of think tank again to engage? I mean, you know, even our community, if we have a lot of older householders, even getting, you know, ready to retire, and we have $100,000 houses, but still, you know, we're going to need some room, some bathroom to even stay in. Are there any facilities even, you know, being thought of to how can I house these people? Or should they, if we stay in our houses, there's still taxes and everything else, even though the children might be all gone, we still have to.
Yeah, well, usually it's more economical to live in an ashram. It's more economical. In Juhu, Prabhupada wanted us to build a vanaprastha ashram. I mean, a physical facility to house vanaprasthas. Well, we do have the Strategic Planning Committee, that sort of think tank. I could bring that up. I think that's a good point. I know they've been thinking on the other end of the scale, how to engage the children more, the Gurukul graduates and the other children of devotees. So they could also think at the other end, how to engage people who are coming closer to the Vanaprastha state. I could bring that up. It's a good point.
Like a, you know, a golden bird in hand. All these people, mm-hmm. you know, want to be engaged mm-hmm. in Christian consciousness. They're coming at the end. And if you had some nice flyers going out, nice advertising going out, that, you know, there are facilities, nice, you know, simple living facilities available.
I'll bring that up. Kunti?
It's just a comment. Guru said, or I don't know if it's true, Guru's class about 7 years ago, someone kept saying, well, we should do this, we should do that, we should think of this, we should correct this, we should make this happen. The we is me. That we is me. There's only, we have to take, it's not a we, but oh, I wish there was good distribution going on, and I wish that there was an organization, organized effort for good. Well, that's me. I have to figure it out how I have to do that, rather than waiting for someone else to figure it out or to make it happen. And that's why I've never had any questions, because I know I'm responsible. I can't look around and say, well, you should do this, Maharaj. You should do this, Guru. Or you should do that, Guru. No, that's me. I've got to take responsibility. And then I think it's that waiting, that codependent attitude, that waiting around for someone else to engage me. I mean, Sugar Ray was meant to throw out the most of them. He's not going to come here and say, oh, you can be. What's going on in his life? Okay, you know, and they're going to mind how many books are you serving? Yorasha, how many meals are going out of the restaurant? It's not like that. We all have to look. I have to look at what I'm doing, rather than looking around and saying, when is that person going to do this? That's the way I see it now. Mm-hmm. I don't see anybody approach. It's the person I was trying to do.
Well, that's a good point. But different ones of us have different capacities, and we should do what we can that's within our capacity. But say, like Kardama Muni Prabhu's idea, that might not be within its capacity to implement. But giving the idea to me, and it might be in my capacity to at least make a step to implement it, that's also a service to give someone a good idea. And it's not going to be a burden on me, because I'll just speak to Gopal Bhatta Prabhu, so.
Yeah, well, I'm not trying to invalidate what you're saying, but it's a mentality. Sometimes, why isn't it like this? Why don't we do this? Why? Well, because that person has to do
it. Yeah. In some cases, that's true. Did Jananda Prabhu?
The spiritual strategic planning committee started its work in the year 2000 with this idea of how we can actually get the American heart, sort of like rebooting the American heart, for instance. We have too many problems to do it sometimes with regard to reboot. Then it's incorporating new programs. The challenges with them were moving from a now the grihastha movement is huge. Now we're essentially majority grihastha, you know.
Mm-hmm.
These shifts take time. There's no such thing as an overnight transfer mm-hmm. from being a contrary movement into a grihastha movement. So actually, I'm kind of having there of, you know, people making attempts, failing, trying something mm-hmm. else. The devotees who are here at the time of Shri Prabhupada know culture of like one of these people in the world. So they're making attempts, but they've been questions about leadership, acceptance of leadership, acceptance of authority, etc. And in those challenges, over this 4 or 5 years, 52 initiatives have come out from the research system and around the world. And we think that's going to happen in Dallas on the 22nd and 23rd. Is going to actually be the meeting at which they're going to be speaking about these 52 initiatives. And out of the 52, 8 have been chosen as the ones that will stop this. Because you can't do everything at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You can prioritize and say these are the most important. Like, for example, one of the initiatives is called the Dalton Mass Initiative.
Mm-hmm.
Where people come to the temple. We welcome them. We, you know, show them around the temple. We receive them in such a way that they feel gratified, have a great experience coming to the temple, and then make progress in their spiritual life.
Mm-hmm.
So they call it the Welcome Mass.
Well, very important. Guest reception.
GSAP's program, another program, is that we receive them in our temple. We tend to be very loud in our cases. We tend to take our instruments and really express our presence with our instruments in our hands. Express my presence and all that. Playing a little louder than my shirt. Things like that. So, I feel that individually nobody has any restriction on trying to do whatever they can to service, like some people who are saying.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like you said, there is a need for cohesion, there is a need for coming together. And I think it is happening. In some ways, Bishop Bhattacharya and I were talking about this issue about what should be doing in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things he said was that Dallas is maturing. It's like a coconut, you know, it's wild, it's green. But it's definitely maturing, it's getting better and better. There's an iconic field, there's something that's happening and moving in the right direction. And I'm sure the same is with the other temple around the world. Sometimes we also become a little impatient with ourselves, and then burn out in the process trying to do something. When we don't do it cohesively, when it's just the family together, working together, that kind of thing. But definitely, it seems like the time has come for some action. We haven't seen much action since Srila Prabhupada left in terms of expanding the movement. But even the team movement is a big challenge.
Mm-hmm. It is. Well, I really appreciate the work of the Spiritual Strategic Planning Committee, but, I mean, we can use many, many more initiatives besides what they're doing. And, you know, sometimes changes are affected by an individual or a small group doing something, and then when the others see that it works, then they get the idea. Like in Chopati, basically, Radhanath Swami and his devotees developed their project on their own, but then when people saw how successful it is, they themselves wanted to learn how they did it there so they could try to implement it in other places. So, I mean, we have to sort of keep like work from every angle, from top down, bottom up, sideways, and somehow or other, you know, work to expand Srila Prabhupada's desires. And it's true that we need to be patient, but it's also true that we need to be impatient sometimes. Like Prabhupada said, we need both enthusiasm and patience. Enthusiasm without patience can lead to a desire to control. Why aren't you doing this? Just do it, do it, do it. But patience without enthusiasm can lead to lethargy. Oh, it's okay. It's Chelsea Hay. It's coming, it's coming, it's coming. Don't rock the boat, you know. It's coming, it's coming. So, we need everything. We need both, and we need everything. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Thank you,
Lord Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai.